And now another no-brainer money-saving tip from Progressive.
That doesn't sound good.
Paper shredder's jammed, but I think I fixed it.
Oh, well, try shredding these $50 bills then.
Seems like it's working.
Better try another $400.
Stop. Instead of using money, use regular paper. And here's a better tip from Progressive on how not to waste money. Don't pay too much for car insurance. Drivers who switch and save could save hundreds. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary.
This is Heidi Helfand. You're listening to the Agile Uprising Podcast.
Greetings and welcome to another edition of the Agile Uprising Podcast. I'm your on-again-off-again host, Jay Hursko. Joined with me, I have fellow coalition members, Colleen Johnson.
Hello.
And Andrew Leff.
Howdy.
Hello, all. And the topic of this episode, we are doing another entry in the Should I Take This series. And today's conversation is going to be around the Path to Agility course. And this is the first time in this series that we've actually had someone who teaches the course on the line with us. So we actually have joining us from Path to Agility, Tim Guay. Tim, welcome.
Oh, thanks. Glad to be here.
Fantastic, Tim. So you know what? For those that may not be familiar with you or may be familiar with Path to Agility, I'd like to give you a second to introduce yourself and then talk a little bit about in the course overall.
Okay, I'll start with myself. First of all, I've been in IT since the days of COBOL and JCL and RPG and stuff like that, using key punch machines. So, I've seen it all along the way. Became involved in the Agile space in 2002 when I read Kent Beck's book on extreme programming. Basically, was starting using it when it was a burning platform situation. It actually worked out well. And then basically, I kind of was on again, off again, agile for a while. Back in the early days, got my certified Scrum Master in 08, and so on and so forth. I'm an agile trainer and coach. I do a lot of work also in the DevOps space. I sit on IC Agile's DevOps track committee. I co-develop their professional level certifications as well as the expert level in DevOps certification requirements, and I'm an assessor for them, among other things. So I've used a lot of frameworks along the way, and I've ran into a lot of bad agile along the way. In fact, one of the things I do is tech due diligence, as I'll go in as part of a team to see how somebody's technology and engineering practices are in an organization. And so I've been, seeing a couple of, two or three a month all last year. And so I got to see the good, the bad, and the ugly. And, I saw there was a bit of a gap. Frameworks are great. They give you a lot of how to build capabilities in certain days, and basically a lot of processes, and it'll talk about things like value and culture, but they don't really define value, and they don't really tie back as much to the business objectives. And I figured one of the reasons why there's a lot of bad agile out there is that people are not doing it for the right reason. They don't know why they're doing agile. They don't know I should do because everybody else is doing it, or our supplier wants us to do it. So they want agile virtue signal. Let's look like we're doing it, but we're really not doing it. Or they'll think they'll just.
You should trademark that agile virtue signaling, Tim. I guarantee you there's a t-shirt or something in there because
a t-shirt in that. I've written about that. Actually, I'm working on another article for InfoQ on agile culture and establishing that, looking at Path to Agility, Cotter's 8 Steps, the Satir model. And I talk about agile virtue signaling in that one too. Anyways, so everyone watches the show like they're really, really doing it. But, but there's a lot of bad agile out there, and all of it comes back to not knowing why they're doing it and not really realizing it, just how all-encompassing and pervasive it has to be within the organization. I see a lot. Oh, we'll send everybody out to a 2-day Scrum Master course, and that's all our PMs, and we'll send all our BAs to a 2-day product owner course. Now we're agile, right? Yeah, great, great. And we ourselves are managed. We don't have to change. Let's all make sure we manage to have some KPIs, some metrics to measure that. Oh yeah, velocity is going to be our metric. Yeah, right. Et cetera, et cetera. And it's just a total train wreck. And whereas a lot of frameworks are good, they don't have the overall context. And I first heard about Path to Agility through the folks at Agile Velocity, which I do some contracting through, and explored their website and then took their courses, their practitioner course and facilitator course. And now I actually can teach it, you know, for a client. And that was the big aha, because it really was a nice wrapper around all these frameworks out there. Because at the end, because I always felt like the end of the day, you know, it has to serve a person. I mean, even before Agile, I was figuring IT, our raison d'etre, is to deliver something to a client or a customer that will will solve a problem for them. Maybe a problem they didn't even know they had. Apple's good at basically solving problems we never knew we had. and so at the end of the day, it has to solve a problem. So first of all, we have to understand what that problem is. In case of business outcomes, okay, we have some business outcomes. Value, all these frameworks talk about value, but what is value? Value to say Apple is very much different to say value towards a government organization or a nonprofit, you know, and so forth. So yeah, basically has within the context of their business. So what are the business outcomes they're looking for? And based on that, you can determine, well, given that these business outcomes are what they're looking for, what agile outcomes support those business outcomes? If I want employee engagement, definitely having people be self-organizing and empowered and feel like they're being supported by management and have the tools they need. They're not basically using stuff that's like, you know, so archaic, it's not even funny, and fighting the systems. As Deming said, the problems are never the people. You have good people. The problems are always bad systems.
Right. 99% of the problems are a result of the system. And, you know, the systems are perfect designed to get the results that they get. So before we go even further into the curriculum and the framework, I want to take a step to, Colleen and Drew, you both took the facilitator course, right? Let's talk about, how familiar were you with the course prior to taking it? And I'm going to start with you, Colleen. How familiar were you with it, and why did you take it? Simple question.
I wasn't familiar with it at all. And Andy Clef, who's also part of our Agile Uprising crew here, is part of the Agile Velocity family. And he had actually reached out and said, you know, we have an opportunity. I think it was in the second class, like very early. I mean, it's still pretty early, but I would think it was only in the second class that they had taught at that point. And he reached out and said, you know, this is a pretty cool opportunity to get in, and I'd recommend, you know, if you have any interest taking it. So I went in pretty blind, I would say.
Okay.
So it was, you know, I wasn't totally sure what I was getting into when I went, and was really, really overall impressed with everything that Tim mentioned in terms of shifting the conversation and the alignment to the business objectives. I'm gonna let Andrew answer too if he knew what he was walking into before I go down that rabbit hole.
No, I think Colleen and I had a very similar experience for our point of entry. I also, Andy reached out to me and said, hey, this is a good opportunity. I read about it on, you know, Agile Velocity's website, and I'm always looking for a new tool to use. And, you know, I do a lot of this alignment work, and I find it very abstract for a lot of organizations to understand. So I actually liked what I experienced when I went through the facilitation course for the Path to Agility, AKA P2A, as they call it as well. I don't want to go too far into it, but it gave me an additional tool to use to connect people with understanding how to think about business value or value in general, right? As opposed to, you know, moving from project to product and understanding concept of cash, how to get value out the door and how to look at it differently than just, hey, we're delivering dates and shiny objects.
Right. And based upon what the two of you just said, and based upon Tim's introduction, it sounds to me, and again, I haven't taken the course. Again, this is the first time we've done this series where I haven't actually taken the course, you know, surprising that I haven't taken it yet. I'll say yet. It seems to me that this is the thing that jumped out at me by both of your responses and by what Tim is saying, is this is the first course that the conversationally, it starts around value, and it starts around what is the value you're going to get out of this. You know, a lot of the, you know, not to make fun of the shirts and certs movement, I'm sure there is a place for it, but it seems to be sometimes it's in furtherance of a business model where this and from the novice from the outside, it sounds to me it's more based upon the furtherance of actually being successful. It's not about the certificate and the letters. It's about how do I use these tools to be more successful when it comes to transforming an organization about the way they think about value.
Well, and I would add to that too, Jay, like part of this framework is that there's a lot of almost ranking or evaluating your current state or your starting point. And so there's parts where you're going through and saying like, here's where, you know, based on these different capabilities, here's where we are from a maturity perspective. Mm-hmm. And that part's really cool because it makes you pause too, to evaluate your starting point. And I don't think there's nothing else I know of like that out there from a framework or assessment perspective, where it's like, let's really take a close look at where we're at before we figure out where we want to go.
Right. And it granulates that at various levels. I mean, starting with how well do we understand the business outcomes we want? How mature are we at that? You know, and you can look, and it basically they distilled it to 9 different business outcomes, which actually make quite a lot of sense because it all ties back to that. And again, where are we as far as stages? Because they have these 5 different stages and the levels of the organization and whatnot, and then the various outcomes and capabilities. And it does, it allows you to basically assess where you're at, where's your starting point? Yeah, well, and also then be able to focus. Oh yeah, we're really good at quality. However, you know, our responsiveness and speed aren't that, and predictability aren't that good. And we build good stuff, but it kind of comes out sporadically, and who knows? and we basically sell a lot of brochureware along the way because whoops, oh, it's not quite ready yet. Kind of like a. Basically our customer, and then you can actually from there and use other techniques like root cause analysis and figure out like why is our quality poor, why is our customer satisfaction poor, and is we putting something else? I mean, because you look at our business outcome, what are the balances between our 9 business mm-hmm. outcomes? Are we getting it out the door ahead of quality? In which case, obviously, at the end of the day, customers aren't going to be happy. Oh yeah, we can rapidly produce junk.
Okay. When you scale garbage, it's a landfill.
Well, exactly. And I always joke about that in the DevOps spaces. You know, if you automate an inefficient process, you just become more efficient at being inefficient. So.
Well, you bring up an interesting point, all of you, around the whole idea about know where you are, where you're starting before you go. Because typically, when we hear about maturity assessments, right, that's the hot topic nowadays. Everybody's got a maturity assessment. Typically, those maturity assessments aren't run until after you've, quote unquote, transformed, gratuitous air quotes, you've done your organizational design changes, and now you want to see where the teams are. But to everyone's point, I think you kind of miss something in translation where if you don't know where you're starting from, how can you even kind of get an idea about where you want to go? And that whole idea of, you know, I'm a big, listeners will know, I'm a big Spiral Dynamics fan, right? And in Spiral Dynamics, they talk about your job isn't to make anybody transform. Your job is to make everyone the most perfect manifestation, most positive manifestation of where they currently are, and then you can start to shift the frame. And too many times, I do think the shirts and certs crowd, as all of you nod along vigorously, walk in with this idea that we're going to change everything. Well, that not necessarily is our mandate, right? It's a little bit more nuanced than that. By the way, absolutely. Tim, I got to give you a shout out for using the term raison d'etre. I've never known how to pronounce that. So that's the second one you got for me. I definitely mangled it in a previous podcast and somebody was screaming at their head unit.
Well, I'm actually French Canadian by ancestry.
So it makes sense. There we go. That was my secret all along. So Drew and Colleen, you both took this course in person. Yes. So this was this an in-person course or was this a remote? Oh, it was remote. Okay.
Yeah, so I go ahead. Sorry.
No, go.
No, I was going to say I took it remotely, and you know, with any e-learning anymore, especially with the world we live in, it's challenging. But I have to say that it was the first time I took a course where I got sent something prior to the course. So.
Agile
Velocity sends you these cards.
Yeah, and these big decks. Yeah,
and it was actually, I really appreciated the fact that I had something, and mm-hmm. I refer to these a lot, and mm-hmm. it's part of what I liked about the Path to Agility framework air quote, was the fact that I have something tangible, right? We work in stickies and cards. It's a little bit difficult now that I can't, you know, physically pan these out or so forth or mix them around. But I do like the idea of something tangible to put in somebody's hand and talk through something. And I'm a big fan. I'm a huge Jason Little fan, right? Like I use canvases all the time when I'm doing this type of work. Mm-hmm. And I like the partnership, almost like, I don't want to say bolt on, but the addition of having these cards and creating a canvas from it, right? Absolutely. So everyone walks out of a room with a common understanding. You may not all agree, but at least you have a common understanding. And I also liked, you know, I say this in a good way, the simplicity of the path to agility kind of direction of, you know, align, learn, predict, accelerate, and adapt.
Right.
It keeps things kind of clear and focused. And it's not, these are words we all use. It's not very agile-y, right? So we're not using all these kind of weird words. We're using common language, which I also like. So I think it gives people an opportunity not to over-rotate on all this nonsense of language, and right. really drives to the point of, what are you trying to do as an organization, right? Like you're not delivering transformation. What are you trying to get to, and how are we going to work towards that and figure things out? Drop Agile out of the mix. Don't even use it. Let's just talk about change. Let's talk about people, and let's talk about common goals and vision to get to the point where you want to go. And I found a lot of value in the P2A framework to help organizations understand that.
Right. So to your first point, the idea of getting something tactile, right, is huge, especially nowadays where we're all, you know, we're all sitting in Zoom meetings, you know, like in a nested Zoom meeting. It's like Inception, right? I'm in the snow level. I got to find a way to get myself out of it. So having that tactile, almost like a response mechanism, right? It gives you a different way to interact with the content in a way that you might not have thought of to begin with, right? And you're right. E-learning and distributed classes, it's so much more difficult. Right. Then having someone in the room where you can actually make eye contact and know when Jay is over there messing around on his phone, Drew is multitasking. You know what I mean? It's totally different monster. So what I did want to ask is we talked about the course materials, right? And we talked about taking the course virtually. And I want to pass the baton to you, Drew. I'm going to start with you. If you had to describe back the course to someone, and then I'm going to wait for Tim's feedback. If you had to describe back the course to someone, how would you describe it?
For me, it was, I don't want to say easy, but it was easy to be a participant in. I didn't feel overwhelmed. I didn't feel that we were talking about concepts that I didn't understand. I just felt that I was connected to the material. To me, it was easy for me to insert myself in the class and really participate fully without feeling a lot of intimidation that I was completely lost. So I did appreciate that piece of it. And I thought, you know, it's a work in progress. I think with any of the virtual training, it's wonky at times, but the online collaboration tools worked well. I couldn't remember if we used Mural or Miro, but one of them. Yeah. So I use Miro a lot at my clients. So I thought it was well designed. So I think that for as early as it is in its adoption and conception, I think it was a really well thought curriculum and experience for me. So I think Jay stepped for a second. Same question to you, Colleen, and then we'll round it out with Tim's response.
Yeah, I thought the layout of the course and like you said, Lef, like the shift to having to do everything virtual is it's like when we try to teach different stuff and then people say that they hate, you know, something about Kanban because of Jira. I feel like it's hard sometimes to give assessments on some of these trainings because some of it is some of the things you either like or don't like are a casualty of how we have to deliver now. And I did not love Mural, but I also did not do my homework to learn how to do it. So there was, you know, I think Mural had some hiccups in the class itself where like things were moving or stickies were like you were picking up somebody else's card on mural. Some of those things, I think you just work out more too as you do these trainings with these tools, right? So nothing to do with the content at all. The one I did was two full days, two back to back full days, which I'm comfortable with. Some of the feedback I've had from some other trainings more recently has been like, I've been teaching one where it's every Friday for 4 hours for four Fridays type of a thing, right? So I think playing around with the formats sometimes can be nice too to break up some of the content. But overall, the class was really interactive. I got to know a lot of the other people in the class, which I loved. And we got to share a lot of stories about like current clients and who we're working with and how we would be able to use these things. And I mean, from a consulting perspective and a coaching perspective, that's invaluable to have those conversations about how you put this to use.
It's like group therapy in a classroom setting. So let me ask you this, Colleen. I forgot to ask that. How big was the class itself?
It wasn't very big. I feel like maybe 10 of us.
Okay. Truth be told, that's about in the wheelhouse where most of these episodes we've done, most of your virtual classes are around the 10 to dozen mark, which I think is right. Probably close to a sweet spot. Is that about right, Tim? Is that why you?
Yeah, it's about that size? 10 to 14 and is a good area to be in. Anything beyond that gets harder to deal with at a virtual level. And actually, I just want to make address several things. Mural and these other tools are probably the main challenge of doing this. I mean, if you're delivering it in person, you'd have the cards, you'd have whiteboards, you have flip charts, and it'd just be far more organic kind of vibe happening along the way there. And basically have lunch together and stuff like that. But the course itself, the beauty of it is it follows several things. It follows a natural progression of how you go about doing this thing. Okay, what are the outcomes? What are business outcomes? What we're looking at, starting at the business outcomes. We don't care, because who cares what framework we're using? Who cares? I mean, you got to focus on what it is at the end of the day we're trying to do. What keeps the lights on, so to speak? What will help keep the lights shine maybe a bit brighter? And then you work your way through the whole thing in the stages. And Drew was talking about the stages. And the stages, interestingly enough, align very nicely with Satir's model for change, as it happens. And going through that little dip and coming back out of the valley Paul Bunyan in his writing, said the slough of despond there. And basically hits all levels of the organization. So basically it shows people that it's not just the teams, it's everything, the whole holistic organization along the way. Now, following up on what Colleen was saying about, there's a lot of good interaction going on with other fellow coaches and whatnot. As a nice follow-on, everybody gets to be part of this P2A Slack channel. You get to be part of the Slack channel. So there you can really form more groups. And basically, if you have you're struggling with some aspect of it, you can ask the community to see what they think, what they think along that way. And probably certainly I would also encourage people to then form even their own little groups around that and create own little coaching circles along the way. And basically act to support one another in all this. And then also there is people, you can also become involved if you want. I am, but certainly anybody who's at the facilitator level can be involved in working on the next version of the framework. Right now we are working on the next version of the framework. And so there's very much a way of continuing. It's not like it's not like a mother turtle lays the eggs and walks away. No, you can be totally involved in this, ongoing.
Right. It's not a fire and forget. There's an opportunity. There's an opportunity for you to actually stay engaged with the coursework and help drive where you think it should go.
And also stay engaged with each other. I mean, through the Slack channel, and then maintaining that connection along the way. So you're not sort of left to fend for yourself at the end of the day.
Right, which is a big thing that I think we've seen with this series is not only the learning, but the chance to reevaluate, reassess, and reapply the learning later with people you shared the class with is a really, really big, inadvertent almost marketing piece, right? Because I want to go back and say, hey, remember a month ago when we took that course? Colleen was in that class with me, and you may run across a name that was in under different cover and say, hey, we took this class together. Can we chat about X, Y, and Z?
Well, exactly. I mean, there is that building up of the network. I mean, on a practical basis, as a marketing basis, I mean, the more people we know, the happier we are. You know, I mean, and, you know, it, definitely if I was looking at a large transformation and it was more than I can handle on my own, I would start be casting about, you know, who else took the course with me and, you know, who else maybe should have certain expertise in certain areas. Oh, yeah, you know, say Sally's had a lot of experience with health insurance companies. Not so much in my case, being Canadian, but you know, that'll bring her, I'll bring her into the fold and so forth that way.
Okay. So, and that lead, perfect segue into my next question. I'm going to start with you, Drew. If you had to say, you know, what, if you had to say a certain audience is needs to take this course, right? Like you, when I think of this course, I think of X people, X type of people, X type of roles, X type of job duties should take this course. Who would you suggest?
Well, part of me wants to say everybody that deals with any sort of facilitation around driving results, right? So outcomes, or has conversations focused on outcomes. I think that this course is beneficial. It's a good tool to have in your toolkit. I would probably say more coaches probably would benefit from taking this course. But even, you know, I almost feel like internal employees should be taking this course too, you know, to right. as much as that hurts my wallet, right? Like this is part of, you know, my job is to go in and do this type of work. But I do think that getting an understanding of how to look at things differently from other people's perspective is really, really helpful. So I don't think there's anyone that wouldn't benefit from taking this. You may not use it every day, but it certainly gives you some good ideas and thoughts and powerful questions to ask when driving towards something, right? Through good facilitation. And this, to me, is a really good facilitation technique that anyone that facilitates a lot of discussions would greatly benefit from.
Okay. Colleen, same question.
Yeah, I mean, I would plus one everything Lef said. I guess as listening to you talk about it, I've kind of got one more I would throw in there that might be a little unexpected. You know, this kind of goes back to what Tim was saying about where many transformations start. But I would say anybody that's been in a director or leadership role over a PMO or a product or a project management organization should go take this. I find myself in so many companies that are trying to go through a transformation effort where they do exactly what Tim said. They take all of the project managers and send them to Scrum Master training. And the person that they report to has no fucking clue what to do to help that team anymore. They're like, well, I don't know. I mean, should they still make Gantt charts or I don't know how to help them because they don't understand what their role should be. That level of leadership in an organization, I think, would benefit so much from this because it gives them a way to talk to leadership and understand the goals and the business objectives that you're driving towards, but it also helps you, I think, create like a coaching practice for your Scrum Masters around what things they can be working on with their team and how you can kind of almost have like a roadmap for each Scrum Master's team for, you know, being able to say like, you're working with your team on cycle time. You're working with your team on breaking work down, right? And have very clear goals for every person on your team. And I think that that's something that so many managers of Scrum Master teams struggle with, especially if their background is a PMO director.
And you know what, Colleen, you touch on a very interesting point, right? We often approach transformations and most of the first things that most companies want to do is they want to get all their people trained. And when I do gratuitous air quotes around their people, because they're thinking of the rank and file, the project managers, the PAs, like Tim said, right? All those people. Whereas, you know, leadership doesn't need to be an expert in it, but the people who are in these, I should say, leadership type roles, because, you know, managerial tiers, right? They should at least be passingly aware in what's going on. And specifically, like you said, you know, PMOs, APMOs, the LACE, to steal a safe term, they need to understand the whole idea of moving from a project to a product-based environment. And what is a true value stream? You know, what is an experience? What does a customer experience look like? And a lot of times you're trying to use the handle of a screwdriver as a hammer. They don't understand why it's not working.
Right. I just want to make a few comments. First of all, there's actually two parts to this training. There's a one-day practitioners and a one-day facilitators. So the one day practitioner could be sort of pivotal. Everybody can take it. In fact, it would be a very good thing for a leadership to take. I mean, a day they're willing to, you get people away for a day to do that. And if they're not possible about that, certainly you could teach a condensed version of it, focusing on outcomes, and then leave out the capabilities, because get them focused on outcomes and get it across outside of IT, because the business outcomes across cut the entire organization. So it's very much business agility, innovation, continuous improvement, employee engagement, customer satisfaction, market responsiveness. These are all like not just IT things, they are the business thing, the whole cross along the way. Now, as far as the second day, I mean, obviously coaches and consultants, but I also, anybody like, as they were, Drew and Colleen were saying, who basically has to facilitate. I definitely would send the PMO folks to the entire 2 days. Certainly to borrow from SAFE, I would certainly send release train engineers in to take the whole thing, and probably even my Scrum Masters along the way, because it to take the full 2 days. Everybody takes the 1 day, but for the full 2 days, because it's very beneficial across the board in that sense. Among other things, even if you're like lower down, okay, I'm just this worker bee, I got a Scrum team of 8 people, but it helps you get the big picture. And I think context is huge. Context makes a lot of difference. Yeah. Like I remember the most terrifying statement I ever heard from a team leader was at a large Canadian bank. And we said, we don't even know who our customer is. Because they just built one little small subcomponent for something big. And I was thinking, OMG.
Right.
This scares the heck out of me. Because you haven't a clue what you're doing, why you're doing it, and what basic implications of making decisions. How can you make any decisions when you're living in a complete vacuum that way? And this, again, gives everybody the context. Okay, I watch it. You may not pick all 9 outcomes your organization, but we say, okay, to us, we're really kind of focusing. We want to balance quality and market responsiveness and speed predictability. So we have these things. Okay, so I know now that everything I'm doing is in the context of improving, balancing quality, speed, market responsiveness, and predictability. And so I have my context with the balance in it, basically. And I get the context, where are we? Well, some areas we may be fairly mature. Other areas we may be, as immature as a 2-year-old. I mean, it's just like, there it is.
And that's where the assessment piece comes into play too, to start, right? Is know where you are before you take that first step.
Exactly.
And that part that Tim's talking about, I think, is so interesting in working with executive leadership to say what I do. I make them rank those business outcomes right in order, put them in priority order. They can't all be number one. I had one executive say, this feels like a trick. Aren't they? Shouldn't they all be important? And I was like, well, you can't do them all. And I need to know where to focus. And I think they're, it's a really interesting conversation to have, to hear their feedback on things like that. The one that I always find fascinating is employee engagement. So I've been able to use this twice now with different executive teams and seen almost the polar opposite. One company had it at number 3, one company put it at number 9. And, it's interesting, right, to think about what that means. It's like, what that drives from a coaching perspective, right? And I love that conversation starter, that those business outcomes kind of help guide in understanding what things are going to matter to the company and what's going to feel successful to that company.
Well, I just want to make an interesting comment on employee engagement. It basically underpins everything else. If your employees are demoralized, disengaged, and don't give a proverbial, your quality is not going to be good. Your customer satisfaction is not going to be good. Everything is going to be bad. You can't get that without having an engaged. And I speak both from using services. Someplace you go to a store, are dealing with some service, they don't care, and basically you end up feeling like a bad experience. So customer satisfaction is bad. And I've actually been in organizations the other end where I've gone from highly engaged, top 4. One of the 4 people picked as an employee of the year in an organization of 5,000 to basically being demoralized and out the door 6 months later. So what changed? Certainly it was my level of engagement. There certainly wasn't my skill level or anything else. But because anyways, I won't go into the story, but definitely it was a situation which anybody would lose their motivation So yeah, employee engagement, you know, I was trying to point out that you can't have everything else at a high level without an engaged, empowered,
workforce,
motivated, passionate workforce. You can't. All right.
And there's something interesting about that, and maybe this will be a topic for another chat, but the larger the company gets, the more huge, we're talking big companies. I work for one of the biggest, right? Like 480 plus thousand people in my company. Do you lose that employee engagement, right? Is it less? Do you hit a threshold? And this is why it's such an abstract concept sometimes when we talk about business outcomes, is when you're dealing with companies at such a large scale, how do you even navigate through so many different personalities and jaded employees or happy employees? Is there even a desire, or it's just, we're so big, we don't care, you're replaceable, right? So how do you start to navigate through that? And it's one of the challenges I have working with executive teams is just that, right? Like they report to the street. I don't care about my employees. I want them happy. That's great if we can get there. But you know what? Our stock price is important, and we have to protect the information hitting the street. So really, employee sat is a nice to have, as long as it reports to the street as, yeah, we're doing great work. So I think that there's something there that, you know, I need my ROI, which is a horrible, it's a trailing indicator, right? It's a lagger. So can you use it as a data point? Yes, but what is the outcome that you desire that you're then looking at the baseline of are you getting a return of investment in your employees that you're ignoring? Mm-hmm. No. So how about you start investing in the people that work for you to see if you get a better, you know, morale, and then start measuring happiness, which is kind of sounds weird, but there is some truth to that, right? So there's a great simple app, Nico. I use it for like internal happiness scores with teams. Just, you know, it's just something silly, right? It just gives mm-hmm. you something to do. But it's interesting to see the data that comes out of that. But in any case, I think that going in with the P2A stuff, it definitely gives people something new to chew on that's been around for a long time. I mean, not to slam Agile Velocity at all, but this isn't new, right? Like they haven't come up with anything that we haven't been doing. They just came up with a cleaner way to do it.
Yeah, basically. It's just they've organized it. They pulled it together. They put it in a nice context. I mean, it's like, well, just, you know, really, there's not much new in the world. Period. Yeah. I mean, you know, yeah, basically, you know, like how we run a city. I mean, the Romans were running cities the same way we run cities. So nothing's really changed in 2,000 years.
Right.
In that aspect of it. It's just we repackaged it. And it's true. I mean, you know, it's a lot of the stuff is, you know, based on satire, based on Cotter, based on common sense. I mean, a lot of it is common sense based on the basics that I knew way back when I was writing COBOL programs. You know, at the end of the day, you know, I would look at my boss who had this really bizarre ideas how we would measure our productivity. And I had a conversation. Well, you know, why don't we talk to the people we're writing programs for? Are they happy with it? Do they like what we're giving them? Not count my lines of code that I wrote today. Thank mm-hmm. you very much. So, and again, if you look at organizations, organizations that are engaged do have a better ROI or better outcomes. I mean, I remember Apple had its greatest growth during the time when Steve Jobs was still alive and running it. You talk about building the next great thing, you know, and mm-hmm. that would really fire people up. They felt they were making a difference in the world there. I mean, if you look at any context of any organization, political movements, the ones have changed. I mean, you know, how you can just totally, you know, accomplish the impossible or even, you know, even better at it. I know I do a lot of work I've worked for large organizations and small organizations. I mean, I've done a lot of work for JP Morgan Chase, which is pretty big as far as organizations go. And Jamie Dimon's done a good job of really kind of firing that organization back up and remotivating it. Has went from being the second largest bank to the largest bank under his watch. Mm-hmm. So again, at the end of the day, you tell people that, yeah, ROI is important, but this contributes to ROI. I mean, because, you know, You'll get a lot more done. I mean, you look at even the nations. I mean, you look at, innovation between, countries, which basically feel you can actually benefit and get rewarded for your innovations and effort, or ones where you actually get punished if you come up with a too smart with ideas. And then you see, who does, look at North Korea versus South Korea. There's a nice comparison,
Yeah, international geopolitics in corporate America, it's kind of terrifying.
But you do have organized, there's still organizations out there that are very much, let's say, have a very punishment-oriented culture,
Punitive. Yep. Yeah. So I know we're quickly coming up on time, and I want to go around the horn first. I'm Colleen. I'm going to start with you. Final thoughts on this course. I know we covered your experience, we covered the materials, we covered who you suggested. Any other final thoughts regarding this Path to Agility course?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's great. I think, like Andrew said, the materials and the way that it's taken a lot of things that I think we struggle to connect the dots on in a very clear, concise way is super, that's the most beneficial part in my mind. And I would say the other piece is it gives you, I think with some of the other agile assessments, it's like, well, you need to improve on your predictability. And it's like, cool, how? and so I like that Path to Agility has acceptance criteria, like measurable outcomes to drive to improve your maturity on all of these things. And they're not, to be blunt, they're not like bullshit fuzzy things. It's a very concrete, tangible thing to work towards. And I think that is so valuable for teams and probably one of the things I've used the most since taking the class. So I've used that with coaches or scrum masters on the teams to say, like, let's look at where you are. Let's pick one of these things to work on for the next couple of weeks. And I'll check back with you and we'll talk about, has it changed? Has it improved? So it's very, it's very concrete. And I think that part's awesome. I would say it fell. The only thing that has fallen a little flat for me, and this could just be delivery, was trying to do some of the executive level conversations and workshops around the agile leadership team concepts and getting them involved. I felt like I probably threw too much at them that was too much in the weeds of how the outcomes connected to actual things for the teams to work on. I think that was probably just my delivery and not the content, but I felt like they got a little bit like deer in the headlights of, we don't care how the sausage is made, just make it faster and taste better. my only criticism. And I think it's more of how I delivered it.
Again, it kind of, it comes with practice, but again, on another note, we are, the framework is being refined as is the ways of delivering it. I mean, it's fairly early days. It's just, if you look at SAFe, now it's SAFe 5. There's a lot of these toolkits and stuff like that to do because it's very mature. But SAFe, as originally came out, when Leffingwell came out, and just like DAD, which I was, was pretty sketchy as far as what you did with these processes. So it's an evolutionary thing, a work in progress. We're incremental and iterative as we are. But I think what I like about it is it gives you the why. I mean, first of all, Drew, why are we doing this? And what do we need to do in order to get this as far as the capabilities? It doesn't care the how. Really, I mean, when it gets done, I have these 100 capabilities and 400 acceptance criteria plus, but it doesn't care if I'm delivering them using SAFe, less, Scrum at scale, Scrum, even crystal orange, whatever. It doesn't matter how I'm delivering these capabilities, or even just doing a lean waterfall using Kanban, turning, take Kanban, go run amok on my waterfall process that basically looks like more like Kanban than anything else. It doesn't care how I deliver it. What it cares about is what am I delivering it and why am I delivering it? And by the end of the day, as I said, the raison d'être, there's the term again, is to meet specific actionable business outcomes. Yes.
Perfect. Drew, final thoughts?
I think everyone pretty much stole my thunder in that I would echo pretty much what everyone has said and just say that, it's not a silver bullet. I feel like we adopt a lot of these things as silver bullet strategies and it's not. It takes a mindful approach to know when to be the battering ram and when to wear the velvet glove when you're being the battering ram. And I think it's just, it's a good tool to use for enriching conversation and having a much better facilitated session than going in, you know, with nothing or just, you know, I like to work in silence with executives because they like to talk. So I like to force them not to talk. So this also gives an opportunity to give them some thoughts for that silent time to work through some of the challenges. And really, it's just, I've enjoyed it. So I want to keep doing more of it so I can keep seeing what's working and what's not. And like Tim had said, I think they literally are just releasing the next version of this, yep, or they did this week. So it's definitely picking up some momentum.
Okay. And Tim, I want to obviously end with you. So if listeners want to get more information, if they want to get more information on the course itself, they want to contact you directly. Where do they go? Where do they find this info?
Okay, well, so I'll start with the overall info. PathToAgility.com is the website where the framework's in, and they'll have the links to the courses, you know, a great overview of the material and whatnot. And of course, also through Agile Velocity. Me directly, I'm on LinkedIn, Tim Gui. I actually have I've written an article, a LinkedIn Pulse article on Path to Agility there. It's a short one just to give a quick overview of it. Plus all a bunch of stuff on all sorts of topics. I tend to basically write a lot of these LinkedIn articles. So there's content there, links to the stuff I've done for conferences, conference presentations. So they can go onto LinkedIn and contact me there directly. Or, you know, timothygui@yahoo.com. So there it is. So
perfect. Perfect. And good stuff. And I will put a bunch of links into the show notes from some of the, to how to people can get you, Tim, and some of the websites, which will help our listeners. So we are quickly approaching time and I want to be cognizant of that. So on behalf of Colleen, Drew, and myself, I want to thank you, Tim, for taking time out of your day to join us. On behalf of Colleen, Drew, and Tim, and myself, I want to thank all of you, the listeners, for tuning in once again. If you enjoyed the episode, please give us a review, a rating, some feedback on iTunes, on Stitcher, on Spotify. I think we're even on Audible. Oh God, there might even be a Pornhub upload out there somewhere. Who knows? If this is your first time tuning in, you can subscribe. If you like the discussion, you want to get more of it, we have a very, very active Discord channel. Again, I will put this in the show notes. Lots of conversation going on there if you want to meet other practitioners such as yourselves. And lastly, we are committed to making the Agile Uprising always free. However, we do have a Patreon. If you really enjoyed the content and are so moved, who knows, you might even get a surprise in the mail from yours truly. So again, I want to thank Tim. I want to thank Drew and Colleen. And once again, until next time, this is the Agile Uprising podcast signing out. Wash your hands, wear a mask.
Definitely.